I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by the 10K Collective. The 10K Collective is a collection of men and women who are doing at least $25,000 a month on Amazon in the UK, US, Europe, doesn't matter, but that is the figure as a minimum. Now, why that figure? Because it means you get to meet with like-minded people who are serious about Amazon, who are doing well, and who are ambitious to do better rather than knocking around with newbies, which isn't going to help you if you want to scale up from six figures a month to seven figures or whatever you're ambitious to do, four to five figures. We have people who are doing up to around the quarter of a million a month mark. And as I say, the lowest is 25K. So it's still quite a big spread, but we have amazing things that get shared. You will get 30 minutes each, minimum of 20, 25, even in a really busy month. And there's only 8 to 12 people at any given meeting. So what do we cover in the meetings? Well, we cover topics from how to stay in stock, make more money by not missing out and not being out of stock, dominating a market and the mindset needed, handling whole container loads, how to predict stock needed, for example, how to get a product on primetime British TV for free, as one of our members did back at Halloween last year. So these are not prescribed by me and it's not a set course. It is simply what comes up, what you need to handle right now to move your business forward. It's very simple, robust format. It's doing really well. We've got great loyalty from the members. I think out of 10 people that have joined it so far, about 8 are still with us after several months, which is a real testament to the fact that they're getting value and there's a great feel of community and we have a lot of fun. We take business seriously, but we also try not to take ourselves too seriously. We have a lot of fun. We're very open and we have a lot of serious debates that actually result in people doing stuff and taking action, like opening up in America, like going to Germany, like, you know, doubling their orders. I mean, serious action takes place as a result of these meetings. And it's also good fun. You'll need to be able to get to London as well as doing 25,000 a month minimum, roughly in dollars. And it's application only. So if you want to check that out, go to amazingfba.com/mastermind. Make sure you click through to the 10K Collective page rather than applying for the Zero to Hero Mastermind, which is just for those who are just starting out. Thanks very much for listening. Now, on with the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Amazing FBA. Today, I'm joined by somebody in an extremely important area, and that is in the area of e-commerce outside of the Amazon space. So it's 2018, and much as it's scary to some of us, me included for sure, to think outside the box there, it's going to be a necessary thing. So today we have with us Jason Miles, who is from winningonshopify.com. He's Udemy's number one e-commerce instructor, and given the number of courses on Udemy, that is no mean feat. That's certainly quite impressive. He's a serial entrepreneur, set up multiple e-commerce brands, and an author as well. So very warm welcome, Jason, to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Really excited about it.
Yeah, I think it's very important. And we've had a number of interview guests who've been hinting that either you need to get in and get out on Amazon quickly because things are changing, or you need to establish a real brand and use Amazon to get you started maybe, but you need to establish your own brand. And I guess that means your own website to start with and multiple other things as well. So I think it's a very timely interview, very important, particularly for those who are ambitious to make a living or even a fortune out of this. So tell us a bit, Jason, let's backtrack a bit. How did you get into the whole business of e-commerce and Shopify and before that Amazon, if you did that at all?
No, never. We never started on Amazon. We actually started on eBay, February 2008. And we were, like many people, desperate for money. We needed to make some side money. And at the time, our youngest daughter was going into kindergarten. And so my wife would drop her off at school and literally had from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. to have free time. And if we weren't broke, she probably would have just rested, you know, just relaxed, recuperated. But we were sort of desperate. And so we were thinking, what could she do to make some side money? And we stumbled into selling on eBay. As it happens, her superpower is creating doll clothes at what you might call a super professional level. And most people in that category make stuff that looks like it's from the 1860s. And so my wife's approach was like, I'll walk into Abercrombie and Fitch or, you know, Forever 21 or these other super contemporary stores and make, you know, sort of the haute couture version of 18-inch doll items. And so we, for the first 18 months, we just auctioned those on eBay. We got our feet wet. We understood how to start selling online. We created our brand. called Liberty Jane. And we had a good time. The problem was that was not a scalable business model at all. And so I could hit relist. And so the formula we kind of got into was I would help with the branding, marketing, that kind of thing. And she was the, you know, making the items. And she had a bit of a background in photography as well. So we, you know, kind of had an in terms of the visual presentation. And so after 18 months, she was completely burned out, and we debated whether we should just stop doing it at all. And instead, we decided to pivot. We got a copy, I don't know if you're familiar with Jim Cockrum's book, Silent Selling Machine, Hiding Inside of eBay. Back in the day, it was eBay. And you know, his advice was, look, find a community and sell them digital goods. So we pivoted to digitally downloaded designs, PDF documents. And in September 2009, we sold our first batch. We sold 11 the first month and gave away about 200. Started to grow an email list. We did it through our own website, and we hacked together, and it just took off. And fast forward to today, we run on Shopify, obviously, is the platform we run on. We've done 2.5 million downloads to date. We do about 60 to 70,000 transactions a month. And we've turned it into basically a marketplace that we run. People can go check out what we do. It's called pixiefair.com. And you can see our brand is there, but we have about 95 other brands there as well. And we've scaled. It's worked out. We moved to Shopify in about 5 years ago, and it's become a fantastic solution for us.
Wow, so interesting. Sure, so this is not just timely for everybody, but this actually is tracking my thoughts. This is quite spooky, because I've been thinking about the whole business of playing to your strengths. And funnily enough, I bumped into somebody in a cafe here in Hampstead, where I live, in North London, which has got some very, very interesting people hang out in the cafes, a lot of interesting entrepreneurs. And I was chatting to this guy quite randomly, asked him about his computer cover, of all things, because I've got a Mac and, you know, kind of fell in nerding. Yeah. And he was talking about this book that he's got coming out, a guy called Ash Ali, who I'm probably going to have on the show, I'd imagine, at some point, because it's a very good message. And he was talking about having an unfair advantage. And I was thinking, well, what I know about is more, I've got a background in education, and even this is a kind of digital world, if you like. I'm offering information rather than hard goods to people via Amazing FBA. But I also sell hard goods on Amazon. Yeah. But it feels like a hard work, and I'm not sure it is my great strength. I was interviewing a couple of weeks ago from the 10K Collective, who's got a massive engineering background. So physical products is his great strength. So
I listened to that interview.
I mean, but he's got a fantastic background and enthusiasm and appetite for creating physical things. I mean, engineering's all about that, I guess, if you're not a software engineer. So how on earth did you even get your head around, this is a rather stupid question I'm going to ask it anyway, because it occurs to me as the first question, so it may be in other people's heads as well. How on earth did you even get your head around changing business models so violently in midstream? I mean, did you not have a massive fear that you were losing all your expertise in starting afresh, that you would be starting from zero?
Yeah. Well, the question, okay, can I ask another question to answer that question? So the question, a lot of people ask the question is, how in the world did you get into that weird niche?
Absolutely.
Like, it's such a, and so that to me, to get to your point about your, you know, superpower or your unfair advantage, was actually, like, at the time, we didn't know my wife's skill set was so actually amazing, because she was raised, and her mom had worked at a fashion label in LA. And so my wife was raised knowing how to design and make clothing at a, what you might call, super professional level. But she never used that. She wasn't in the trade or anything. She didn't really even know how it compared. So when she started making these dog clothes, our daughters would take them to the Brownie Troop and the, you know, the school programs. And all the moms were like, what in the world is this stuff? Where did you get this stuff? And so my wife, it was a process for us to realize she's really good at this. And so that was the first sort of thing. So, and we didn't even know if we put it on eBay, if anyone would be interested. But in the first 15 minutes, we had a response back from somebody to ask a technical question. And we were like, what now? And so my wife was like, wow, people are asking about this. So that superpower sort of revealed itself to us at the first part of our journey. And that was important. Just one little side story on that. Our first employee that we hired came to us because she was a fan of my wife's work. She had been a senior designer at Nordstrom Product Group. Nordstrom is based here in Seattle for 13 years. And she was friends with designers who had designed at Abercrombie & Fitch. And they were fans of my wife's work. And so we were like, what in the world? So that was the first thing that we just had to stumble into. And I would really encourage your listeners to stop and think about their superpower or skill in a niche or industry that, you know, it might be very, very unique. And that would be the first thing. Now, in terms of the digital goods transition, what we realized was we had to make a change. I mean, we were at a hard stop because she was in burnout mode. And so what we realized was we had an opportunity to leave one market space, which was selling the physical items, and enter another market space, which was selling the designs to people who actually might make the stuff and sell it. So for the first 6 months, we had a little thing in our digital goods that said, you can't use this for any online selling. And people just went nuts on us. They were furious that we would have that in there. And after about the 50th email, where somebody had said, you guys are jerks, you're idiots, this is so mean, I thought to myself, there's a whole group of people who want to use these patterns to make money. Why don't I flip the script? Why don't I embrace them, create a group for them? So we have a group called Make Sell Grow. It's about 4,000 people now who use my wife's designs to sell on Etsy and eBay. And we encourage it. I mean, we help them. We do our best to promote them. We made a market, a little space on our website, Pixie Fair. You can go to the marketplace and see all those items. And we don't get anything out of it. We just really just like, yeah, I mean, it's just like, why would we fight the energy there? You know, it's like, so anyway, it's.
That's very, very interesting. So that's another thing that, I mean, in the Amazon space, everybody tends to get very defensive about their, even an idea for a product, you know, keyword, really. They're trying to keep it to themselves, like they're going to manage that if it's any good. That's not going to really work very well, but I guess you don't want to invite the competition to sit down for dinner. But the other thing is the idea of encouraging people to monetize your own specific designs is a big flip of the mindset. I mean, let's backtrack a little bit because I'm still getting my head around this. I mean, you know, we've spoken briefly beforehand, sure. And I knew that, you know, you're an expertise in Shopify, and we'll dig into that and, you know, and we'll get into that deep because I know that's extremely important to a lot of Amazon sellers now who are seeing the writing on the wall with just purely being based on Amazon. Amazon is amazing. It's like a rocket fuel, but like a rocket, it goes up and it can come crushing down. But I still got my head around this whole different business model that I didn't really have really clear in my mind, that you flipped from the physical goods to digital. So tell me a bit more about Jim Cochran's advice on that. I mean, he's obviously quite a giant figure in the Amazon training world.
Sure.
What was it that he said that kind of flipped the switch in your heads to go from selling physical widgets on eBay to selling digital goods on your own website? That feels like a completely different business, but you did it kind of immediately. What was it that made that happen?
Yeah, it is a great question. There were two things that culminated in, I think, that decision. Well, three. One was, I mentioned she was burned out and we had to make a change. The second one, and so we were scouring the internet, like, how do you sell online? How do you build a business online? And we found his book. And so his core thesis is, and it's still in his current iteration of the book, except to be honest, no one actually takes him up on that thesis. People only take proven Amazon course from him, seems like, which is, you know, I mean, it's fine, but Amazon is an opportunity. But when you listen to what he's saying, he says, expand beyond Amazon, learn to sell online. And so chapter 10 in his new book is a transition to Shopify. And some of his biggest success stories are all on Shopify. A couple things that culminated together. One was our urgency to find a different model. Two was we found his book, and his basic thesis was find a tribe and figure out how they could buy digital items from you. And then the other thing that happened was, and I don't remember the exact sequences 10 years ago now, but I got a hold of The Long Tail by Chris Anderson. I don't know if you've read that book or not, but it's
indeed. Yeah, very interesting book. Yeah.
Internet classic. Man, if you have not read that book, download the Audible version today, listen to it. It might be 10 years old now. I don't remember the exact sequence of when it's all put together but what I realized was near zero marginal cost of digital goods is absolutely magical math. And so if you don't understand that, I mean, people conceptually get it. It's like, okay, if you sell digital goods, if my wife designs one item, and we have done this actually, we published it in 2009 in September of that year, we still are selling the exact same thing today, almost, you know, I mean, 9 years later. And there's near zero marginal cost, meaning the incremental unit sales costs us almost nothing.
Yeah.
Now, you build a business and you end up with staff costs and marketing costs and taxes. And, you know, I mean, your business expenses, you know, pile up as you scale. But nonetheless, there is no cost of goods. There's only cost of creation. So in any niche that you can think of, and I always say to this to Amazon sellers, especially if they start to really go into private label, what is the digital item that you could add to the mix that your ideal customer would really appreciate? And frequently that is how-to guides, you know, collections of information around a specific topic. I mean, if you go find any niche or industry, people who are passionately buying those items, they're also passionately learning about the topic. And so to me, that's always where this has led, is back to the idea of, can you introduce a digital item into your private label product, that kind of thing. So that's kind of where my mind goes with all of it.
Amazing. Right. Well, I think that's such a big topic. I'm going to say that, I mean, we've given people a bit of a taster for that. I think we should do an episode focused on that, because I think the whole idea of digital products being such a, you know, obviously no marginal cost, it kind of stands to reason that it's worth at the very, very least exploring. Yeah. Let's flip over for the moment to the, because this is so much for people to take on, me included, very, very exciting. Let's flip over for the moment to the back to physical goods, but via Shopify, or indeed any goods via Shopify as opposed to Amazon. Yeah. So what on earth is Shopify about? I mean, first of all, just remind those of us who don't know what Shopify is, what it is.
Yeah, sure.
So why should we get onto Shopify rather than just stay on Amazon? What's the argument there?
Yeah. So to just clarify what Shopify is, if people aren't familiar, it's an e-commerce platform for making your own e-commerce website. So you'll have a branded website with your brand, your URL. Shopify is really a ghost in the machine. You know, it's not as if it's its own. It's not a marketplace, for example. It doesn't compete with eBay and Amazon. It competes really with WordPress or Wix or other website building tools. And so the opportunity with Shopify is to build your own, what I would call home base in American baseball terms, and really have that home base be your central place online where you collect your tribe, collect email addresses, do contests, engage with people, have FAQs, list your products, and really start to build your brand. And obviously this makes sense for a category of Amazon sellers. I would say, you know, that use case is probably strongest for the private label folks. And once they've really clarified their private label niche and started to collect a couple products in the same niche, then Shopify is certainly something to consider. Now, I don't think Shopify is like an alternative to Amazon necessarily, where you want to dump one and go to the other. I think the more sophisticated approach is to say to yourself, how do I mentally move myself from saying Amazon is where I sell to saying, no, Amazon's a sales channel. And as it happens, there are 200 other e-commerce marketplaces on the internet, believe it or not. And so then the question is, well, so if Amazon's just a sales channel, what are my other sales channels and how do I manage that? And Shopify has built fantastic functionality to do that. So you can, for example, add all your products on Shopify on your own website. You can have those be pushed over into Amazon, listed on Amazon. When the customer buys on Amazon, you see it in your Shopify store. The inventory is synced and all those kinds of things. And then you can even use FBA to fulfill off of Shopify. So you can still use Amazon in almost every aspect of its sort of awesome, you know, awesomeness. But you've got this home base that you start to build your defensible moat. And Warren Buffett's old metaphor, the castle with an unbreachable moat, is sort of one that I've always gravitated towards. And we don't have any castles here in the Seattle area. But
we have plenty in the UK, but not many in central London, I have to say. We got the Tower of London, I guess. That's hard to get into. Famously hard to get out
of. I've been there.
Hard to escape from, which was the general idea. It's kind of a little bit different, but the same idea. Where do I start with this? This is such a huge topic, and it's a really interesting one that to address, actually, because it's the kind of... the elephant in the room with Amazon, I guess, with a lot of us that have masterminds and we meet up together and people are pretty committed and they've got their whole income really dependent on Amazon, is the whole fact that you're building on somebody else's land and they can take it away from you pretty quickly.
Right.
That said, of course, the logic is very, very strong for creating your own Shopify or whatever store. However, that said, it's not easy to actually make any damn profit once you're off Amazon. And here's my understanding, and please do speak to this, because this seems to be like the $64 million question, to update them the figure a bit, is, okay, Amazon will convert, even for a private label product from somebody nobody's ever heard of, at say 30, 40% quite frequently, quite easily. They have a bunch of shoppers there. Now, and famously, most websites off Amazon will convert at 1 or 2% traditionally, maybe a little bit more if you're really good. And you've got to pay to get the traffic there. So the economics looks pretty ugly when you're selling a $15 product with a $3, $4 margin, and you've got to spend, you know, 50, whatever it is, pounds or dollars to get the traffic there. How on earth does the economics of that work compared to Amazon?
Well, the answer goes to your product costs and obviously your margin and your product, right? So that's the first question. I mean, so you're giving away a good chunk of margin though through the Amazon system, call it 15% or so. I mean, however you want to do that math, you've got a couple costs there. And so that's not insignificant, but so you do have to do the math both ways. So, you know, what I would say in general is, in terms of your conversion rate, our conversion rate on our Shopify site is 27.5%.
Wow. Okay. But so you're doing something pretty special.
We are. And I'll tell you exactly what we're doing. It's a freemium model. So when I have people transact through my shopping cart for a free item, it counts as a conversion. So in essence, that's inflated by free versus paid items. But nonetheless, that's the mechanism by which we sell. So that's one piece. It's just your cost of goods and whether you have margin to spend on traffic and that kind of thing. But the second piece, and here's a super important aspect, and this is why I really am an ultimate Shopify fanboy. The second piece to it is, you mentioned that most websites have a conversion rate of 1%. Well, as soon as you start talking about conversion math, you start asking yourself, what are you doing to the customer on your website? Do you have an upsell built into your checkout? Do you have a cross sell? Do you have a down sell? Do you have related products? Do you have a review system? Do you have a sophisticated email follow-up system that retargets people for the abandoned checkout items, that kind of thing? All of those features and functions that Amazon does seamlessly and flawlessly, your website has to do, or you're not going to be competitive in today's e-commerce space. So Shopify enables all of those functionality pieces. So, you know, I mean, if you're building a, let's be honest, sort of lame WordPress site and putting in sort of a lame shopping cart plugin, you're just not going to be competitive with. But it's not even competitive. It's like, what does the user experience feel like? And are people being treated in a way that they expect to be treated like? Because Amazon does set the bar in terms of how you actually have a checkout experience, one-click checkout and those kinds of things. So all that has to be baked into your e-commerce site for this to be a fair fight in a way. And okay. Shopify allows you to do that, which is why I love it. So
that's amazing. Well, I mean, you've maybe this shows that I've been spending too long hanging out with Amazon sellers and not enough getting out of the house, because the conversion rate of 20, do you say 27%, 22%? What was that percentage?
27.5.
That just blows my mind. I mean, that is extraordinary music to my ears. Now, so freemium model, just to clarify what that means for people who haven't come across that, I presume it means something like people have a free product and they can upgrade to a premium, in other words, paid level, if they choose to, and a certain percentage of people will do that.
We do, but that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is we have, you know, if you go to pixiefair.com, you can just see what we're doing, but we basically do a freebie Friday. We have a catalog there of about 2,400 items, digital items. So we do a freebie Friday item. So the free item you get on Friday when you show up transacts through the shopping cart. Well, we do between 11 and 14,000 transactions every Friday. Every one of those has an upsell. So the customer who gets the free item is offered a paid item that's related or either directly related, like, hey, this is an add-on to this specific item, or it's of interest at least. And okay. So it immediately goes from a free item in their cart to the potential for a paid item in their cart. And that's the business model we run, and it just works.
Yeah, it clearly is working for you guys. So, all right, let's talk me through this. So you're saying like some lame WordPress site with a rubbish cart plugin is not going to do the job, and I hear you. To me, this feels very daunting as somebody who's maybe got codependent on Amazon for my business and to work. Talk us through the raw basics. So I'm a guy, you know, I've sold on Amazon for quite a while, but let's imagine that somebody's just sold on Amazon for a while or, you know, say a few months, maybe sold one, maybe two private label products. What do I do next? So Shopify works really well. I hear about it. I hear it's good. What are the sort of very basic steps to get started with a Shopify site, which while I accept things may not make profit immediately like any business, that has a decent chance of getting to break even or profit within a few months?
Yeah. The first step is, with no disrespect, you have to sort of reprogram your mind to be willing to be all in on your brand. I go to speak at conferences, and usually I'm the Shopify guy at the Amazon conferences. So it's always hilarious to me because I'm sort of this weird like outsider. So I always do this funny thing, and I guess it's me mocking people in a way. But whenever we are sitting at lunch or dinner or breakfast or whatever, I always say to people, "Hey, what do you do on Amazon?" And frequently they'll say, "I have a couple private label products." My first question is, "What is it?" And, you know, it's like the walls go
it's in the baby space. Or, yeah, it's kind of vaguely to do with cars or, yeah, it's kind of a plastic thing. Yeah.
So if you're in the private label or Amazon community, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The defensiveness level is like DEFCON 4. And so because candidly, that's the culture of that community. And when you but it doesn't have to be true, but it is true. So anyway, I can't fight the machine on that deal. But what I can point out is that if you're serious about going to Shopify, you have to be serious about creating a brand that you're the champion for. And being a champion for your brand means you're willing to, not only willing, it's like you're genetically, you know, possessed to talk about your product and your brand if you're actually mentally wrapped around the idea of being a champion for your brand. And many, many Amazon sellers who have kind of hacked their way into Amazon selling has heard about private label. They see the strategy. They get trained on this. But they still have that mental mindset of be secretive. Don't tell anybody what you're doing. The zero-sum game is on. And it's me against the world. And so that just won't go on Shopify.
Yeah.
And people who bring that mindset fail because, for goodness sakes, they won't even put their name on their Shopify site. You know, I train these people. I mean, we've trained over 12,000 people now through our Udemy course on Shopify. And a lot of times then I'll do site critiques and stuff like that. It's really fun. I love working with people. We have an inner circle group and I do one-on-one, you know, coaching with people too. And so, we know, when I look at their Shopify site, one of the things I always do is look at their about me page. And you know, it's like, is there a picture on there? Is there family story on there? Is there journey to create their product and brand on there? And if it feels like a ghost in the machine, like the website could have been made by a bot in China just fronting goods for Alibaba, then I'm like, you're never going to sell anything online, man. You've got to be real. You've got to say, I love my product and I am the only one who is passionate about putting out there in the world right now. And I'm going to get a super tribe of awesome followers that all love it too, because it starts with me and my mindset. Okay. So anyway, long answer, I apologize, but that's the biggest hurdle.
That makes so much sense. And it's so much, God, there's so much going on here. I mean, Wow, this is really I mean, I knew this was going to be a very important conversation, but I didn't know it was going to be quite so thought-provoking, which is a good thing. But it's painful for an Amazon seller because you all say the same thing in the Amazon echo chamber, and you're here saying, you got to talk about your product. Oh my God, it goes against the grain. You're right. I mean, when I started off, just to confess, I was busy work as a musician. I didn't even want anyone to know that I was selling stuff online. I just wanted to quietly sell stuff online. I didn't want my name associated with it. It was just rubbish from China, which is, to be honest, all I feel like I've mostly sold online. It was reasonable stuff from China, not rubbish, but nothing special. I didn't really want to be associated with it, and I just wanted it to sell and make me money, and that was it, kind of a magic one and done. And what you're saying is what I'm gradually coming around to realize, and you've just articulated what I suppose.
So can we go deeper into your situation and just unpack that for people a little bit?
Yeah, sure, if it helps. I mean, I've been selling, my background is music, and I'm passionate about my music, and I think I probably will die passionate about music. So I started off on Amazon thinking, what am I sell? And I start, well, let's start with something I understand, which is, I think, a very smart basic idea. Probably one of the fewest smart things I've done in my Amazon business, I think, in some ways. But, you know, managed to go just by taking action where most people just cop out, I think had done okay. But I was selling stuff that really did a useful job, but was very, very undistinctive. And I think I'm just reaching the limits of that. And that's why now when I work with people coaching them on Amazon businesses, I say, well, you know, I'm not yet at the point where I can advise people on how to build a Shopify business, although I think it is an important thing. I try and send them to other experts on my business partner, Rob Sleeth, actually builds Shopify sites for people. So he knows his business there. What I do say to people is, like, try and make something that connects to a target market you really understand, and try and make something that really you understand the customer before you start stressing about the physical widget that you're making.
Totally agree, 100%. That is the right path. It's niching into a specific community that you can serve well. So in your case, have you done private label products and the music?
What I did, and what I've discovered is that over time that I found some nice little niches which I could serve, and niches within niches. For example, I started with, because my background's orchestral playing and choir conducting, so I started with stuff that, again,
resources. This
unconscious smart move was that you could sell multiples of these at a time, because, you know, whole orchestras will buy 40, 50 things like music stand lights, music stands, that sort of thing. But what I found is over time, because it's a very obvious generic type product, that's got more and more competitive and harder to defend the price point. The sales volume is still there because people still need it, but the ability to defend it's gone down. And going down the route of trying very alternative product lines and just thinking, well, but my heart's not in this, and I want to find something that I can get behind and go, I'm passionate about this. So,
okay, so let's do this on the fly right now.
Oh, my God, right. Let's do this.
So here's what I would recommend to you. You've already got your niche figured out. You've got private label products that are working. What I would say to you is that the opportunity to really think about that user experience for the orchestral buyer is probably a teacher, group leader, maybe, you know, leader in their community. What's the most valuable thing that a seller into that community could possibly have? And the answer is the contact information. And if those people are teachers, then they're going to be buying product annually for their, you know, kind of events and their new groups, you know, school seasons, whatever. And so then the question is, well, if you can sell them, if they're just looking for the cheapest possible product, fine, whatever. But if you actually can build a relationship and add value to their experience, could you do that on Shopify? And so coming up with a unique brand that speaks to that, like a brand, for example, orchestralsupply.com. Obviously, that domain is probably not available, but you get the idea. And then asking yourself, what personalization can I bake into this in a way to bond with those orchestra leaders? You know, you want them to know you. You want them to like you, and you want them to trust you, and you want them to buy from you all on your website. And so, and if you've got a private label product on Amazon, your clear obvious opportunity is to create packaging that points people to your standalone Shopify site, your domain name, and offer them a coupon, offer them an upsell, whatever, in your packaging. If you're brand registered on Amazon, you have your private label opportunity, you should be using that to the hilt to convert people over to your Shopify store and start to build out that relationship. Now, the other thing that you can start to do then is contests and traffic strategies that get those ideal buyers, get testimonials from them, and include them in a community. You know, if you're an orchestra leader in, let's say, a college, you're probably a part of association. You're probably part of a Facebook group. You're probably part of a, you know, network in your region of, you know, you do your concert events together. And how can you leverage that to get word of mouth marketing going? So this is where I start to coach people and go into their niches with them and encourage them along the way. So I mean, it sounds like you're on that path, my man.
I mean, I think it's odd how, I mean, there's a lot in what you say, but just to reflect how I started off in this stuff. And it's odd how I started off in Amazon, and I think I had the disadvantage of being trained in something and having a certain way of thinking that worked really well to get me started and got me going with selling stuff online in a way that I'd been thinking about researching, whatever, which is a code for fear, right?
Yeah,
for about 15 years. But it got me.
I was there too.
But I mean, it got me going. But what I had when I started my second business online, which is the podcast, about 6 months later, I didn't follow any system at all. I just hashed a talk about ugly WordPress site. In about 48 hours of sweat, I just created, you know, I went from knowing nothing. What's an RSS feed? How does that link to iTunes? There's a lot of Googling, a lot of swearing, and a lot of work. And but the point is, I just kind of created my own thing without really thinking too much, without doing research, and without taking too much training. Now, obviously, I think now is the point where my website for the podcast, for example, just looks horrible and needs a massive overhaul. And now is the time to get some experts involved. And I'm doing that with, you know, my business partner's also got an expertise in website design, and I probably need a designer in. But the point is, I didn't prematurely fixate on a particular way of doing things. And I think what I've done with Amazon, I've made that mistake, and I'm trying to break back out of the box is surprisingly hard. What you're talking about, the mental barriers, I think are probably bigger than any practical barriers.
It's definitely bigger than any practical barriers. I know that's true. And because I go to these conferences, I talk to Amazon sellers so much. There's a concept in psychology called the Insta-Lung effect. And it basically says that once you learn a way to solve a problem, you become blind to other alternative ways to solve that problem. And for most of us, we're trying to solve a side hustle, make income online, you know, get rich. I mean, money, it's money. I mean, we're trying to figure out how to do sales. And so as soon as we get that, drug-like, money from Amazon, we start to say, oh, I'm going deep into this. I'm going to go from 5 figures to 6 figures to 7 figures in this. And that's great. It's cool. That's awesome. But to your point, it is not the only way to make money online. And so it is important to step back and say, okay, wait, what am I really doing? Am I a brand owner on the internet? Am I acting like an actual brand owner acts, or am I acting like a retail arbitrage newbie? It's very different, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I could go on and on.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a good question. And I think also the answer can be anything you like. Am I acting like a brand owner, or am I being an arbitrage newbie? And I think if you're going to be an arbitrage, that's fine. For example, Matt Ward, who I interviewed, you know, just before this one, will be coming out, you know, the people will have already had the chance to hear it. And if not, then folks, check it out. Very thought-provoking in the context of this discussion, amazingfba.com/MattW. But he was saying, well, he set up a brand that's basically, it was arbitrage between what he could get in China and what he could sell things for in Amazon.com in the USA. And he was, I think, very clear-minded about that. And I think the problem comes when you think you're building a brand, but you're just acting like an arbitrage. That misfit between the way you perceive the world and the way the world actually acts, that's when, you know, serious accidents happen, as they say. You know, it's like I've watched it, and for some reason, this is confessions time, this one, for some reason. You have the knack of a good coach, you're getting people to confess. But I watched, you know, I'm fascinated by air accident investigations for whatever reason on YouTube. You've got to have a hobby. And one of the massive points of failure often and causes crashes is that pilots think they're at 500 feet and they're actually, you know, 100 feet and about to crash into the mountain. So thinking you are one place and being another.
That's deep, man.
I mean, this is such a big way of crashing your business.
And to tie that into Reid Hoffman's analogy, I don't know if you follow his work, but Reid Hoffman is the founder of LinkedIn. He's got some videos on Stanford, like stanford.edu/innovation. I don't know what it is, but it's, you could Google that. But he describes this metaphor, to your point, of entrepreneurship like being pushing an airplane off a cliff when you're just starting to put it together. He was a co-founder at PayPal, and then he took all that money and started LinkedIn. but and he is a famous Silicon Valley guy. But that metaphor of building your airplane while you're falling to the ground, I mean, I think he said at some point in PayPal, they were losing like, I forget exactly, but it was like $10 million a month and they had no revenue model. And, you know, so, and that's building an airplane. So Amazon is, if you do it right, Amazon is an amazing, you know, airport that you can take off from, and you build your plane, you put it together, you use their launch pad, basically, I guess a switch to space here, and you really use the leverage point of their sales velocity to clarify your opportunities to build a long-term opportunity. Yeah.
I think you're right. I mean, that's the thing. The sheer presence of that, which outside of Amazon is so damn hard, is so seductive, because finding traffic, getting your own traffic is a constant fight. I mean, I have this with Amazing FBA, you know, constantly trying to get traffic, get people to convert onto the email list, get people to go from the email list to, you know, sign up for coaching or whatever, or to, you know, to buy other people's products and services, which I'm affiliated with. And I try and be very, very careful about the quality of, you know, for example, the people I'm interviewing. I mean, this is fantastic for me. And I am still an Amazon seller very much myself, that I'm still, if I relate to it, I think other people will as well, but it's still hard. And the other thing is, I think, you know what, just thinking about psychology, which wasn't what I was expecting to be discussing, but there's this thing called fractionation, which is a concept in hypnosis, which means if you hypnotize somebody and then bring them out of a trance and then hypnotize them further, they'll be in a deeper trance than they were before. And this is very true for addictive behaviors like gambling. The fact that in gambling, you win big, then you lose. And at some slightly random point, you win again, apparently makes it more addictive than if you just gave people a payout every time.
What's it called? Teaching me.
Fractionation, it is called. I believe that's not necessarily quite the same. I'm probably muddling a couple of concepts together.
Fantastic.
But, you know, that's the thing with Amazon as well. When you have a big payday, it is big, and you've done nothing because you've done a lot of stuff. Obviously, you've found a niche opportunity in terms of the keyword research. You've found the suppliers. You've negotiated hard. You've had your heartache when your stuff gets stopped at customs and all the other rubbish. But then, you know, on Cyber Monday, suddenly you're selling, you know, well north of 100 units of one single thing, and you've done nothing. That's so seductive and addictive. And then, of course, that goes away again, and then you're fighting to get that back. And there is something about Amazon that can become very addictive for not very rational reasons. And I think, you know, it's worth saying that. I mean, even had people who are doing really well generally on Amazon, making, you know, 100,000 plus a month, saying just how addictive a buzz it is to suddenly sell 1,000 units in a day, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree 100%. I think it's important for new people to come into this idea to hear from their veterans in their industry. For example, you know, 10 years ago, everyone had the same fervor for eBay. And if you weren't around back then, you don't know how peaked up everyone was on eBay. It was like the gold rush of making money online, and that declined. And now, I mean, I just heard you say at the beginning of this podcast that people need to, it's 2018, people need to start thinking about alternatives to Amazon because it is changing. They're obviously focusing on brand registered sellers. You know, people are starting to actually talk about the fact that, is retail arbitrage going to exist in the future? And of course, people argue it is because they teach and train people how to do it. But, you know, you have to stop and say, wait, what's the history of this industry? And the history of this industry is that there are marketplaces that become incredibly popular for sellers to sell on, but those marketplaces may come and go. I'm not saying Amazon's going anywhere, but your opportunity to do retail arbitrage or whatever might shift. And obviously just the viciousness of competition. So, you know, the history of this is important to me. And again, long-term, you want a castle with an unbreachable moat. And so, you know, traffic's a huge part of that, in my opinion, too, on your own website. I've certainly talked about that. That, to me, is one of the number one concerns, issues, or problems people ask about, is how do I get traffic to my standalone Shopify site?
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.